We've a lot to get on with today. Items that need to be attended to. Issues that need to be addressed. I'll just move this because much as I like the way my voice sounds at the moment, that's going to be a bastard to edit if we go... That's going to be... No amount of AI technology is going to fix that, I can tell you. It's going to be manually going in and going, oh, what did I do today? Did I swallow the microphone with my throat? However you swallow things with. You don't swallow things with your mouth. I know it goes into your mouth. When you put something into your mouth, you're not swallowing it with your mouth. What's that American sport? You have the big mitten. That's not what's catching the ball. And the same way, the mouth isn't what's swallowing the... whatever you're swallowing. No, no. The mouth is just a funnel. It leads down to the throat. The throat does the swallowing. The throat is the gatekeeper. You can have something in your mouth. It doesn't mean it's gained full access to your body yet, I can tell you. Your mouth doesn't decide what goes in and out. Your lips are just there going, oh, we'll open this up and let it in and let the fellas inside in the throat have a go at it. The mouth is just a front porch, basically. If the postman came along now with something valuable that was supposedly needed to be signed for and he just left it in my mouth, I tell you, I wouldn't be impressed. I'd say, that's very valuable. Thank Christ he didn't get lost. Or thank Christ he didn't steal it and then claim that it had been delivered. Because no, the mouth is no place to be. The mouth is the front porch. It's not the... Although now that you mention it, I get stuff left in the front porch all the time. It's not like I'm getting anything important. Oh, it's usually just... cat litter tray liners, cat litter tray liner removers, cat litter tray liner desmellers. I don't get cat litter delivered. Oh, they ship her over from Amazon from England. They charge you customs or something of a euro per ton or something. Suffice to say, the mouth is just a porch. And we've done a lot of this anatomy stuff lately, so I don't want to belabor this point. So I'm just going to move on now. But no, the mouth is just the porch of the body. It's not, when you're into the mouth, you're not in there fully into the rest of the person. That's not to say you can just enter someone's mouth without an invitation. That's not what I'm getting at all. No, no. I'm saying if you put something in your mouth, you haven't swallowed it yet. If you got inside a crocodile, in theory, there's a chance you could get out, even if you've been swallowed. One fella once got out of a whale or a shark. He'd been swallowed and he got out. In theory, there's no reason why you can't still have a chance of getting out, even if you're swallowed. You're not dead just because you're swallowed. If you're swallowed by something that can swallow you whole, the bigger the mammal, the better. Isn't it the same with everything? The bigger the something, the harder they fall. Isn't that a phrase? Because if they're big enough, they can stand up inside their stomach. That's what makes all the difference. It's like, I know this from watching Kill Bill. If you're buried alive lying down, that's problematic. You don't have a lot of space to work with in terms of picking yourself out, knocking down the walls and things. It's hard to knock down the wall of something that's 10 inches high while you're lying down. No, if you're inside a whale's stomach that's tall enough to stand up in, you have some space to work with. You can set up there and take your time and have a plan. Now, if you've thought this true, you'll have something with you to cover your face. You don't want to be swallowing all the stomach juices from the whale, because that's just going to make you nauseous. You don't want to be swallowing that. Can you inhale the stomach juices inside a whale's stomach? I don't know. Is that how stomach juices work? Suppose you can. I suppose it's a bit like if there's raining, if there's drizzle, dampness in the air, you suppose you can inhale that. Or can you? I don't know. Or should you? That's the question. You probably shouldn't. You should probably... My point is, you should probably try not to. So if you're going anywhere where there's any remote possibility of you getting swallowed whole by a whale, bring a mask with you and don't leave it back on the boat. Bring it with you. Inside your hat or something, or wherever you swim in. Do people swim in hats? Swimmers that you see on the television, they wear these little tight plastic skull caps. You wouldn't be able to store anything under that. That's the problem with those. If you wore a proper hat while you were swimming, then you'd be able to store your emergency equipment underneath that. You'd be able to store your oxygen mask for if you're swallowed. The hat itself might come in useful as well. Don't know what it might be useful for, but if you're going to get trapped inside something or stranded anywhere, it's always useful to have something rather than nothing. I've been reading two or three different books lately about people being stranded at sea in an inflatable dinghy for several weeks or in a little fishing boat drifting across the Pacific for over a year. I've read a couple of them. And in one thing you notice, the people who have things with them, wherever they have with them, the things they have with them come in useful. If you're stuck at sea and you're there and you're trying to catch some fish and you happen to have a fishing boat with you, as one fella did, that came in useful. It came even though the boat wasn't working properly. He had all sorts of issues. If I remember right, the boat sank as well. Or did it? Wait, no. He had the fishing boat. And then, and I'm getting two or three different books confused. There was a fella on the last one, fell off the ship he was on. It was kind of a party ship, and he fell off a tree in the morning while he was vomiting over the deck rail and fell. Nobody noticed he fell into the sea, and he spent about 20 hours in the sea before they came back and found him. He didn't have very much with him, but he had a piece of paper or something. I forget what it was, and he was using tiny bits of the piece of paper every now and then to do something ever with. I can't even remember what. Something to do with reflecting the light off something to measure something, or I don't even remember now, or something clever. Like this, he had this bit of paper with him and he managed to find a use for it. He even mentioned, I'd better go sparing on this piece of paper now and only use a tiny bit at a time because I don't want to use up my supply of bit of paper. So that was great. It's annoying me now that I can't remember what he was doing with it. It was something shiny anyway. He was using it to measure something to do with what way he was going or where the sun was or something. I don't know. Anyway, point is, where did I start this? Oh yes, the porch. Your mouth is the porch of your body. And while nobody has any right to go into the porch of your body without your permission, all you need to know is that if you're inside the porch, you haven't been swallowed yet. You've been something poisonous or damaging is inside your mouth. You haven't swallowed it yet. Now, it may be lead or something, and it may have poison leaking out of it that will go into your person. It might go into your lungs or your stomach. There might be fumes from it. And that's going to be a problem if it is. That's a problem if you have that in your mouth anyway. I mean, what in the name of Christ are you doing? Why have you got lead in your mouth? Have you swallowed some sort of toy that was manufactured in 1943 and handed down to you through your grandparents and parents and whatever's between your parents and you? What's between your parents and you? Oh, maybe there's not. Because I was used to being in the civil service. You could have... In the civil service, you had a grade. You could be a clerical grade. And you'd have a boss who was at executive officer level. But then sometimes in some offices, there'd be another grade that was between you and the executive officer level. So the executive officer wasn't your direct boss. So can you have that with parents? Another level between you and your children. Maybe there's some way of doing that. The level in between the child and then there's the... If you adopt a cat, you're getting in between them and the cat's mother. But the cat's mother is just going, meow, 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 I'm a cat, fuck off. And its owner is going, this cat swears. I'd much prefer to hold on to its adorable kittens and keep the cat. Would you like to take the cat instead? Of course you'll say, certainly I'll take the cat instead. We did that once. Turned out the cat had a massive infection. Had to have one of its eyeballs removed the next morning by the vet. I didn't even have kittens. There were no kittens on offer. We were actually going to get the cat's sister. We ended up getting the cat and the cat's sister. The cat's sister turned out to be one of the most disruptive cats ever to enter our household. The other cat, though, was adorable, especially after we had its eye removed. It was extremely adorable after that. The vet said, that cat's got an infection that's not gone yet, so I won't be able to remove it, whatever you do to remove the kitten-making abilities of a cat. I can't remove the cat's kitten-making abilities until the infection or whatever is wrong is cleared up. So, had kittens, then got run over. Not great. Absolutely. I still have one of the kittens. It's about 18 at the moment. Anyway, on with the show.
Into your head.
upon a time there was a dog. A dog. A dog. Basically a dog. And this dog, let me tell you about this dog now. Oh, I should probably, just because there are some new subscribers coming in still. Every now and then I like to start a segment with once upon a time there was a dog. And it rarely turns out to be a segment about a dog. It's just a way to get going. It's just one of several ways I have to get started and see where it goes. So don't worry about it. And if this is the second show you've listened to and you're thinking, oh, this seems to be just a rerun. No, it's not. It's just me starting the same way again. I do the dog thing a lot, so don't worry. I know it's very awkward when you find a new podcast and you go, oh, what's the format here? I'm trying to understand the format here. First, there seems to be a prelude where he talks crap for 6 or 7 minutes. Then he says on with the show, and then there's an opening theme tune, and that's when the show proper starts, and that's when he talks crap for about another 40 minutes. And then there's a closing theme tune, and then sometimes there's an afterlude, and then sometimes there's a further afterlude. But that's what I've garnered about the format so far. And you'd be largely right about that. About every third episode, we have a guest in who talks about matters of global concern, usually economics or geopolitics, sometimes agriculture, sometimes science, sometimes literature, sometimes cats, sometimes what happens when you get stuck inside the stomach of a whale who's being swallowed by another whale, who's being swallowed by another whale who wasn't hungry. I think you're probably banjaxed if that happens to you. So then we say, what happens if you swallow a whale while you're inside the whale? If you're inside a whale and you eat your way out and you eat the whale, but then you're inside another whale that whale is being swallowed by, well, you might be in a good position then, because the whale that you've been inside will have absorbed all the gastric juices of the external whale. So you'll be in a reasonably good state of affairs regarding your encompassment. It'd be quite good if we could do that. That's the way the property system should be arranged. It should be like you're inside a whale, inside another whale, inside another whale. Now, I don't mean it literally, but if you start off in your tidy little studio apartment and you buy that, and then you decide after a few years, oh, I need to expand, you should be allowed to buy out other studio apartments around you. They should have been built in such a way that all the walls can be removed and everything expanded very easily. And then you own the outside, broader outside of your one-room studio apartment. And then another few years go by, you should be allowed to buy out the rest of the building and turn it into a house of your own. Now you're probably thinking, some nonsense about how will that happen. Will the law have to force people to move out or something? No, if it's organised in a way where you make this arrangement with other people who are at different stages in their lives, they arrange a system whereby they have a doctor go around to every house and they'll say, oh, this fella in his 70s now, he's probably going to be either dead soon or have to move into a nursing home. So what we do now is start renting out the little front bedroom of his house as a bedsit, and then we'll get someone in their 20s into that, and then we'll rent out the broader area around that. Someone who's in their 30s, who by the time this guy dies, the one in their 30s will be ready to buy out the house. And by the time they're ready to move into a home, the person in the studio apartment will be ready to branch out into that. You get the general idea. It's a bit like one of those, I know I haven't thought out very well. There's some sort of graphic illusion you can make where it looks like an ever-expanding pattern that's broadening out all the time. It's like a floral pattern, and you look into it, and it's like a, I'm not sure if it's a kaleidoscope. It's a bit like that. Like it looks like you're going deeper and deeper and deeper into a geometric pattern, and it looks like you're traveling through some sort of space. You're going deeper and deeper into something, and the shapes are expanding outwards, and it's never-ending. That's what I think the housing system could be based on if we put our minds to it. Not my mind, I'm not economically minded. I don't mean I'm not good with money. I mean, I go to the shop and I ask for a packet of bread slices, please. And they usually say something like, do you mean you want the loaf of bread? And I'd say, yes, please, but one that's being sliced. And they'll say, well, yes, they've all been sliced. All the bread that comes in the packet has been sliced. And I'll say, yes, but I don't want one that's been a full loaf that's being sliced. I want one that's just a packet of slices of bread. I don't want to know that they've all come from the same loaf. But that's the thing to me about buying bread. I do like sliced bread. I do like bread that comes readily sliced. It's mass-produced for the supermarkets, cheap white bread. The only thing I don't want to know is that they've all come from the same loaf. If I'm getting a pack of sliced bread, I don't want to insult the original loaf of bread by saying, I hope you have good heels, because I like good heels on a loaf of bread. Except I don't want to know that they came off the same loaf of bread. I'd prefer it if they had packets of heels of bread and then packets of normal slices of bread from the bit in the middle. The fillet, I suppose. The fillet of bread. Fillet steak. Well, not steak is a bit much, but fillet. I suppose, yeah, the bit in between the heels called the fillet. Now, if you leave the crusts on, but take off the heels at each end, but leave the crust on each slice, that's the thing, I don't know. Are you supposed to trim off the crusts and sell them separately like you do with potato skins or chicken skins and all the rest of it? I don't know. Are chicken skins and potato skins interchangeable? There's a question for you. I suppose it's an incomplete question, because I can't just say, are chicken skins and potato skins interchangeable. I have to say interchangeable for what purpose? I could say, it might be, for example, can use either or in a recipe for chicken Kievs, or is the question, are they interchangeable in terms of being used as an absorbent, compostable cloth? This is an interlude to today's episode of Into Your Head Podcast Hello. Today's episode of Into Your Head Podcast Hello is presumably well underway. This is part of it. Let's not kid ourselves. This is just a normal part of it. The interlude me bollocks. It's just a way to get going. It's just a regular segment. For all I know, it could go at the beginning before it even starts, or at the end, or in the middle. Or somewhere between the middle and the beginning, or between the... you know yourself. No, it's not an interlude. That's a load of bollocks. It's far from interlude, you're arrayed, I can tell you, me. That's what my mother used to say. Except I don't think she's ever said about interludes, although it would make sense, assuming that she thought interludes was something to do with theatre and opera and stuff like that. They'd say stuff like, far from gold crowns or something, it's you were arrayed, you were arrayed. Basically, it's a way of saying you were weird to be nothing. And now you've won the lottery or something and you buy a Mercedes and they'll say something like, it's far from Mercedes you were weird. I suppose it is. Do other things that aren't high class have interludes? I think they probably do. Cinemas, I'm pretty sure cinemas used to have interludes. I remember going to Schindler's List. I think there was an interlude during that, was there? Or did it just seem like there was because of how long it was? It went on for a very long time. Or maybe it wasn't as long as anyone remembered at all and there was an hour-long interlude in the middle. Is that possible? I remember that I went to see Schindler's List in the cinema, but I don't remember whether I thought it felt very long or shorter than I expected or anything. And I'm not sure I quite remember whether there was a long interlude. So maybe there was a longer than usual interlude and the film was shorter than most people seem to think it was. And they somehow managed to create the impression that he had sat through a very long... That would make sense to me as a director, not to con the viewer or anything. You want to imbue the... As Steven Spielberg, you want to imbue his fans who had been raised on Back to the Future and E.T. and other nonsense. He would want to imbue them with the confidence to know that they can now sit through a serious film and not worry about that they're not going to be able to pay attention for 3 hours. And the way he'd do that is by telling everyone that it's 4 hours, but making it a 3-hour film with a 1-hour break in the middle. So then when everyone comes back from their break, they go, oh, we're already 2 hours in. That time is flying. I must be very good at watching movies. I'm just going to relax now and take it all in and let it do whatever it's supposed to do to me. And that's why that man got the Oscars for that. Did he get Oscars for that? I can't remember. Is it possible that he didn't get an Oscar for the film about Oscar Schindler? I suppose I could look it up. I'm not going to look it up just now, though, because my phone's being rather blurry today. I don't want to look at it. It'll just depress me. It'll just depress me. It'll probably depress me even more than it would otherwise, because I'll be looking up the story of Oscar Schindler. This is a further interlude to today's episode of Into Your Head Podcast Low. Now, normally when I do something like this, I would put the further interlude in the middle of the existing interlude. But since the gist of the existing interlude is about Oscar Schindler, I don't think I want to interrupt. Although, wait a minute, it's a thing about the interlude in the Oscar Schindler movie. So I suppose I could interrupt that with an interlude. I don't know what point I'd be. Well, we'll see. I'll carry on doing this, and if there's a point to be made, then I'll edit it in as an interlude in the middle of the other interlude. But if it's not, I won't. I don't want to force it. I don't want to force meaning on something that doesn't have meaning, especially in something as serious as this. Last week I went on about Joker. The character Joker from the Batman genre. The Batman genre. Now, I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking Batman itself isn't a genre. It's part of an overarching genre, the superhero movie. But I would argue that Batman itself is the genre now. It's grown enough to be its own genre, especially since other people who have other superhero movies that they consider part of a genre and you don't necessarily like the Batman thing, they don't want their whole thing to be defined by Batman. And there's a danger of that happening when 80% of everything that comes out is either Batman or someone who once pissed off Batman, such as the Joker. Oh, that English fella who used to look after Batman's cars. Batman had a Batmobile and a Batcave and a Batphone and Batwings and a Batcape and a Bat everything else. And back in the old days, they always used to have this comical English fella. He was what you Americans imagine an English person to sound like Mr. Belvedere or someone. Mr. Belvedere. It was a situation comedy made in the United States. It was aired in Ireland in the 1980s, if I remember rightly. About this fella, for some reason he ends up being a sort of live-in butler to family. He gets to sing the opening song. Supposedly this fella is a down and out now and having to be a servant to a family. But no, he still gets to sing the song. He goes, something cracks on the china, never happened before. Where's my harmonica? Cracks on the china, never happened before. Something, 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 something's built on the floor. No one cared. But something, something, no, gist of it is that things like that didn't used to matter, but now it's his job to clean up, so they do. One of the great American situation comedy theme songs. They used to just tune into those things for the theme songs. They all had their themes. Now, of course, it comes on, you have a thing in the office, and the opening theme, instead of an opening theme, it's some fella looking at the camera shrugging. And then they flick over and they show some fella running out the door wearing glasses, looking angry and up to something. And then they show the camera at the other side of the office and there's some fella fidgeting with a cat or something under the printer. And then they show the opening sequence with a little tune that's about 3 seconds long. Just says the office. And you can see it's too short because they have to continue running the credits for the next 10 minutes over the actual content. Make your opening theme tunes long enough. Make them long enough. They used to go on forever. I'm not saying they all have to go on forever. But if you can sit through Schindler's List for 4 hours, you can be damn sure to Christ as hell in a handbasket that you can sit through the tune to Mr. Belvedere if it's made to that highest standard and if the preceding comedy is modern as something like The Office or Modern Family. When people moved on from those old style situation comedies, it wasn't because they were sick to death of the songs. They loved the songs. Their songs were the best part. People didn't go, oh no, I'm not watching this crap anymore because the songs are so outdated. No. They said we're not watching this crap anymore because they were sick of everything being in a sitting room, a family watching TV and having orange juice for breakfast that never gets drunk because the child takes one sip and then has to rush off to school and then there's a stairs coming down behind the sofa for some reason because no one in America has a sitting room, the candle after, all that stuff. That's what people were sick of. So they moved on to stuff like The Office. But when they moved on to stuff like The Office, they weren't saying, get rid of the theme songs, they're shit. They weren't. Not. People want the theme songs. Bring back the theme songs. You'll be glad you did. If you're a television production company looking to save a bit of money, you can add an extra 5 minutes onto each episode just by reducing one theme tune. It'd be well worth it. I'll make one for you if you like. So you want me to make one for The Office? I'll have a go at it. I'll have a stab at it. The Office. Let's see. Oh, stains on the carpet. Something photocopying and stuff. So, no, I don't think I have the talent for that, to be perfectly honest. But someone does. Someone does. Whoever made all those songs for the old situation comedies, they're all dead, but they have children. And music is a talent that gets passed on from father to son, from mother to daughter, from grandparent to mother and then down to the mother's son, her daughter and all the other different possible configurations. Musical talent gets passed on. My father had musical talent. He used to play a violin, except he'd call it a fiddle. You call it a fiddle when you're playing jigs and reels. You go diddly 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 diddly. You call it a fiddle because it sounds ridiculous calling that a violin. But if you're playing something classical, you call it a violin then. Unless it's not a violin, it might be a viola or something else. That's what you realise when you go into one of these things like GarageBand on the Apple computer that has all these synthesised instruments. That's when you realise you thought all the stuff that was making classical music was violins. There's about 85 different stringed instruments. Half of them look like a violin, but they're different sizes. There's 8 different sizes of violin, but they're all different instruments. And you play them, you don't pick an instrument, you pick a set of instruments. You say, I'll have that whole section of instruments there. I'll have that whole section. And it's not like in a band. In a band, you say, I'll have the whole section of drums, and it's just a drum kit. In a classical orchestra, if you said you wanted the whole percussion section, there'd be about 6 different separate drum kits and there'd probably be a xylophone as well or something. There'd be some fella on a xylophone specialist. He'd be doing very well for himself. If you're the fella who plays the violin or the clarinet, there's loads of them. If you're the fella who's the specialises in xylophone playing and you own a xylophone and it's portable, then you'd probably make a full-time living out of that, no problem. You'd travel all over the place wherever they need a xylophone player for the night. You'd probably do on LinkedIn nowadays. Of course, I'll have to charge extra for travel and for the amount of time I spend travelling. If I'm here and I'm needed somewhere else, you have to go there, do my thing for 3 hours, then I have to come back here as well. You have to pay me to come back here as well. I know that seems unreasonable to you. I mean, someone has to pay me to come back here. If I wasn't paid to come back here, then I wouldn't be available for you. Somebody paid for me to come back here last time, so I'd be available for you to hire me, so I could go to where you are, which is presumably somewhere different. So you have to be prepared to pay for me to come back here. Although now that you mention it, that's ridiculous. Or we'll get an artificial insemination program to do this, like you do now with everything. You go on the internet now and everything's artificial intelligence. I say, oh, hello, can I talk to your help desk? And the help desk will say, certainly, sir. Just search here for what you want to ask me. And you say, okay, I'll search. And it says, what in the name of Christ are you saying to me? And you'll say, why are you swearing at me? And they'll say, I didn't swear. So I said, what in the name of Christ are you saying to me? Do you consider Christ to be a swear word? Because I don't. I consider it to be the official surname of one of the finest deities known to man, or at least his son, who's very well known to man, supposedly. He used to be, anyway. Used to be well known to man, not so much anymore. Now I bring up his name and you think I'm swearing at you. I'm not swearing at you. I'm saying Christ. I'm saying Jesus Christ. If I say Jesus Christ on a popsicle stick, do you think I'm threatening to stick a popsicle stick up him or something? And why would that be a threat anyway? He's magic. A popsicle stick wouldn't hurt him. He's magic. Jesus Christ is magic. If you don't think he's magic, then why would you be offended at me saying put him on a popsicle stick? And by the way, I wouldn't shove her up him anyway. That would be rude. I just have him sitting finely balanced on a popsicle stick. Where you have angels sitting on rainbows and things, or sitting on clouds, or sitting perched on something. If you have Jesus Christ perched delicately on a popsicle stick, doesn't mean you're shoving it up his arse. Doesn't mean it at all. But if you did, that wouldn't hurt him either. I think we're done here. I think this interval has run its course. So, though I think I will put it in the middle of the other interval, though, in the middle of the Schindler's List interval. So back to the ongoing interval and on with the show. Even quite, I think it's quite an emotional movie, but you're showing this scene where there's all these people who are still alive because of him, and they're all going round to his grave or something, and each of them leave down a stone, and they're all in colour now. They've all grown old, and they've all got a bit of colour in their faces and in their clothes and in their surroundings. And it's all because they were alive and well, I don't know how well they were. But in this context, in the proper filmmaking context, you could see from this that they were portraying that they were glad, that they were grateful that they were alive, or they wanted to, or maybe they were just going, ha, you're dead. You're dead as a doornail. And we're here in a blockbuster film that's being made about you. We're not even actors, and we get to be in this. Connie going to get a cut out of it every time someone watches it on Netflix for the rest of their lives. Our children and our children's children and our children's children's children and our children's 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 children and our children's 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 children are decreasingly big cut. I was about to say ever decreasingly small cut, but if the cut is getting smaller and smaller, that means it's ever decreasingly big. Because it's becoming increasingly small, not decreasingly small. Getting decreasingly small would be getting bigger. No, it's getting smaller. I'm glad it. That just reminded me. There was a BBC situation comedy in the 1980s called Ever Decreasing Circles. And the man who was in it was portrayed as being a bit, being slightly mentally ill somewhat in an amusing and non-threatening way. Certainly less threatening than that portrayed by Mr. Bean or the fellow who played him. I know this fellow he's played as a sensible portrayal of an old man losing his mind. I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, oh, that's interesting now. That's very, very interesting what happened just there now. Well, I'm afraid you have me at an advantage. I've been out of the room for almost an hour and a half. I've been out, recording a bit of this, and then there were some things to be done elsewhere in the house. So I did things elsewhere in the house. And then I got distracted by my own fucking podcast. I went into YouTube and I happened to notice You can set your podcast clips, shorts, feed as a podcast in itself now. So I'm going to pretty much ingest myself shortly when I figure. So I set up a separate YouTube podcast for the clips. And by the time this goes out, I don't know. I'll either have ingested myself or we'll all be dead. I don't know either way. Suffice to say, there's now, if you go to intoyourhead.ie/clips now, you can get, you can subscribe to my YouTube channel that shows just shorts from this podcast. or another YouTube channel that shows the whole podcast itself, because YouTube is fucking taking over podcasting now. They said, oh, Google Podcast is dead, but come on over here. We own this other thing over here that's completely unsuitable for podcasting. But come on in anyway. Come on in. Here's a link. Come on in. We're closing down Google Podcast. We're going to send all your listeners a thing saying Google Podcast is dead. Anyone who was on Google Podcast who you enjoyed is now, oh, they're in the past now. They're like one of those, oh, they're like one of those things from the early days of the internet that's no longer a thing. I like that thing. You remember that thing? Someone made a million dollar page on the internet. They sold off advertising on it by the pixel. I think you paid $100 or something per pixel. If I remember rightly, Frank from the Overdice Cape, one of the finest friends of this podcast, bought several pixels. So if you go to the, I don't know, it's so-called something like the million-dollar homepage. If you go look at it close enough under a microscope, you can find Frank's logo. I think it's probably bat wings or something. There was a time when I might have been able to find it, but my eyes are half dead now. So if I went and looked at the million-dollar homepage now and tried to find a pixel, tried to locate a pixel among all of that, I'd probably rip my eyes out accidentally. I'd burn my eyes out. I've never had contact lenses, but I imagine when you're I hear horror stories about people who use contact lenses. They say, these things, what happens is you just forget to take them out and then they get stuck to the back of your eyeball and then they go into your brain. And then you have to wait until they come out again. They either come out through your ears or they come out eventually to your eyes or something. From what I understand from contact lenses wearers, these sound appalling, but you never hear any of them going, oh, I had a big panic yesterday. My compost lens slipped into the back of my skull, so I had to go to the hospital and get it taken out. I'm still in hospital now. I'm just recovering from surgery. I've got a big hole in my head. No, they never say that. They say, oh, something dreadful happened. That sounds dreadful to me. That the contact lens did indeed slip around to the back of their skull, but they came out eventually after a few minutes. Apparently, that's the norm. Eventually, it just sorts itself out after a while. It's no big deal. I've never had contact lenses in my life, nor do I want to, and nor do I want to have that laser thing. How they put lasers into your eyes and they say it's going to be... Oh, that reminds me. Don't go up to blind people in the street and say, do you know there's a laser thing you can get that cures that? We fucking hate that. Now, I've been legally blind for some time. Now, people come up and they say, oh, do you know there's a laser thing you can get cures it completely? I got it. I don't have to wear glasses at all now. It's great. Fuck off. If you say that to people, they're legally entitled to punch you in the face. And you're legally entitled to... Oh, you're legally entitled to shove her up your arse. That's what you're entitled to. Shove your laser thing up your arse. Now, you have to do it yourself. That's the thing with the laser thing. You can't get me to do... It's a bit like... shoving the laser up your arse. It's a bit like that thing, euthanasia. You're not allowed to get someone else. When you're in a country that has legalized euthanasia, a lot of them have it set up so you can't get someone else to do it. They can help you set her up, but you have to do it yourself. And that same is true of sticking a laser up someone's arse who said something stupid to you about laser eye surgery to cure your blindness. You can't. I'm not entitled to put the laser up your arse directly, but I can tell you to put the laser up your arse. And I can instruct you on how to do it. I can hand you the laser. I can switch it on. But you have to do the putting up your arse. And you have to do it. And you're responsible for any side effects. Now, I don't know what you would define as side effects. The thing about side effects, we have to decide what's the desired effects first. Because what is or isn't the side effect depends on what is or isn't the desired effect. If the desired effect is for the laser to rip your colon to pieces, that's not a side effect. That's the proper desired effect, is the correct usage. But you have to decide. That's the thing, though. I'm not... That may be my desired effect for when I instruct you to shove to shove the laser up your arse. But if I say that, then that counts as some sort of accounts. Accounts as, even though I'm not physically doing, accounts as instructing you to assault yourself as some kind of psychological assault. But if I just tell you to do whatever you want with this, and you decide the correct course is to shove her up your arse and destroy your colon with her, then that's on you. That's on you. If I play my cards right, that'll go down as misadventure on your part. Misadventure. It was a misadventure to come up to me and say, oh, have you tried your laser eye surgery? It cures everything. I don't have to wear glasses anymore. Fuck you with that shit. Don't say that to people. Don't say that to people. All you need to say to people is that I've been listening to this podcast. It's been going on for the best part of the last 60 years or so, give or take the 20-year hiatus that came back from last year. The fella's been going gradually blind for 20 years or so, and he hardly ever mentions it. And this is the one time in many, many hundreds of episodes that he spent more than a minute talking about shoving a laser beam up the arses of people who ask him stupid questions about it in the street. And it's not usually in the street. It's usually in here. Either in a pub once or at a bus stop. A bus stop is the place to do it. And I know the bus stop. The bus stop can be in the street, but you Americans call everything a street and I don't.
Into your head.
Two cats walk into a bar. One of the cats goes straight up to the bar counter and says, hello, can I have a pint of your finest Guinness, please? And the man behind the bar says, certainly, sir, a pint of my finest Guinness coming right up. And the cat says, now, how do you know? And the barman says, what do you mean? How do you know? And the cat says, I think you mean, you know exactly what I mean by how do you know. The only thing you don't know is what do I mean by, oh, wait, I lost myself. I was trying to be smart there. I was trying to do to the cat says, how do you know? And the barman goes, what do you mean? What do you mean? How do I know? And the cat would go, you know damn well how do you know means. What you're meaning to ask is, how do I see, I've fucking confused myself again now. It sounded very clever in my head in that moment. And I'm not going to start writing these things in advance, because that's a different fucking podcast. If you want a podcast where the two cats walk into a bar stories are pre-written, then go and listen to... Oh, go and listen to, what's that thing? The something. There's a thing called the something. I forget what it's called. There's a thing called the something. Is this American or Canadian thing? As this fellow comes on, he usually does it in front of an audience, and you have people coming on and they all tell stories. They have people tell, each person comes on for 10 minutes and tells a story to the audience, and it's called the something. I believe there's been spin-offs in other countries. Well, no, that sort of thing now, someone would come on and they'd say, no, they do a pre-written two cats walk into a bar story. And if that was my thing, I would do that, but that's not my thing. My thing is to do on the fly two cat walk into a bar stories. So, no, we won't be doing that. Anyway, then the cat says, can I have a pint of your finest Guinness, please? And the man behind the bar says, certainly, sir. What would you, wait a minute. And the cat says, are you confused as well now? Because the narrator is confused and now you're confused. And the barman says, well, no, I wasn't confused until I remembered, I kind of half remembered what I was going to say earlier that was so clever. But then I got confused because I couldn't remember it then. So I suppose, yes, yeah, I am indeed. I am a little bit confused. And the cat says, fair enough, will we just start again? And the barman says, we will indeed. Let's start again. And the cat says, can I have a pint of your finest Guinness, please? And the man behind the bar says, certainly, sir, coming right up. And the cat says, now, how do you know that it's a pint of your finest Guinness? And the man behind the bar says, what do you mean, how do I know? And the cat says, you know exactly what, how do I know You know exactly what "how do you know" means. What you're should be asking is, no fucking hell. I nearly had it. Jesus Christ. The capsules says, you know exactly what how do you know means. The question you should be asking is, how do I know what? To which I, the cat, would respond, "How do you know it's your finest Guinness? Has it been through your person already? Have you been pissed it out and collected it, and then this gone through and decided, oh, this is a good batch here. I'll keep this for the cat. I'll put this aside. This is one of my better Guinnesses here. But no, I should get a few pints of my finest Guinness out of this bucket here that I've saved over there." And the barman says, "Congratulations, he got there in the end. Congratulations." And the cat says, "What do you mean?" And the barman says, "No, I'm talking to the narrator. He got there. He finally got his little thing, clever little thing out." And the cat says, "Oh, you're right. He did. He got it out. Isn't that great? Absolutely great. You know, it's probably our fault this is so difficult for him to get his thoughts out sometimes, because he's talking through us. It's kind of like if you're dead and you're trying to talk to someone, to a psychic who's a bit thick and not very good at interpreting, and you're there to the best of your abilities trying to get a message through. You're going, oh, please tell them that I left the keys to the car in the back of the thing out there behind the thing over there on top of the thing in the thing. They'll know what I mean." And the psychic tries to interpret that. He'll say, does your deceased cat own a car? And they'll say, "No, why do you ask?" The psychic then will say, "Well, if he did, he doesn't now, because apparently he's left it to you. He wants me to tell you where the keys are." And of course, the customer there will say, "Why would a cat have a car?" And the psychic will say, "I think the question you should be asking there, sir, is why would a dead cat not give away a car? And also, if you're wondering why a cat would have a car, you've no business asking why a cat would get rid of a car. Because either you think cats should have cars, or you think they shouldn't. And if for some reason you think cats shouldn't have cars, then you've no business going around asking cats why they want to get rid of their cars. They're getting rid of their cars because you've already made it clear that you don't want them to have one. So they're trying to be obedient and give it away. And you have to come along and be a smart horse and say, oh, why would the cat be giving the car away? The cat would be giving their car away because you've given them the distinct impression, not you personally, broader society as a whole, has given cats the distinct impression that they're not welcome to be car owners and operators in this society. And not specifically being made illegal, implicitly. It's implicitly made illegal, though, by the fact that if a cat went into some sort of car registration place, and I don't mean the hellhole that all American comedians go on about, whatever that is, the GCT office or whatever that's called, the CLQ office or the GLQ office. Americans like to go on about that place where they go to register their cars and do their car tax or whatever it is they do, but they go on about how it's a hellhole. No, everywhere else in the world we have they're hellholes. They're not as terrible as you make them out to be. And the point is, if a cat went into one of those places and said, "Hello, I want to register my car that I've just purchased, please." The first thing the DIC or wherever they're called would say, "Oh, the party, DMV, is that Department of Motor Vehicles? That's what it is, the DMV. Well, they're not called that here. They're a section of the local county council and they're called something like, I don't know, the Motor Tax Place or something. But if you go, if a cat went in there and said, "I want to register this car, as the owner and operator of this car and I want to pay taxes on it," the first thing the staff member would have to say is, well, they couldn't say, "No, you can't, because it's illegal for cats to do that," because it isn't. There's nothing in the law saying it. But what they would have to do was say, "That's fine, sir. Can I see your photo identification and your driving license, copy of your bank details showing that you've purchased this car using your money, or whatever else. And the cat will say, oh, certainly, I'll go and get it out of my other pocket. And the staff member there will say, certainly, sir. Do you mind if I serve the next person in the queue while you're going to do that? And the cat says, I do mind very much. I've got my pocket here, right here in front of me. I'm just going to take it out of my other pocket here. And you want to go off? Because you can't stand the idea of standing there for a few seconds while I reach into my pocket. Is that it? And of course, the staff member then will say, oh, I do apologise, sir. I thought you meant you were going back out to your car, that he'd left it in the pocket of your coat there or something. Because you don't appear to be wearing any pockets. And the cat says, that's none of your business, sir. When a human customer comes in here, do you say you don't appear to be holding a handbag? You don't appear to have more than 3 or 4 high denomination notes in the back section of your wallet? You don't appear to have, you don't appear to be wearing underpants today. You wouldn't know, because that would be intrusive. So why in the name of Christ do you feel free to say to me that I don't appear to be wearing pockets? It's not your place. It's none of your business. None of your business whatsoever. And then, of course, the staff member will say, fair enough, fair enough. So can I have a look at the ID and the other documents then? And the cat says, you can indeed. They're in this pocket here. I have it in a see-through pocket, so I don't have to take them out. Here you go. And of course, the staff member will say, thank you, sir. Oh, that's very impressive. Is that how you seem to be wearing, having a whole see-through plastic trousers? And the cat says, yes, but as you can see, it's not very effective. I'm not even wearing it. It's useless. But it's good for carrying stuff in. I use it like a little handbag thing, but not a manly one. It's basically, it's a see-through plastic trousers. I think it's meant for keeping rain off. Not very effective, especially if you're a cat. It's a, of course, it's designed properly. It's got 4 legs and it's a bit for your tail to hang out the back. But the rain just splashes up underneath. There's only so much protection plastic raincoat can give to something that has 4 legs and a head and a tail protruding from it that need to have holes. Just a, you know what, especially down the neck. You can't have a tight collar on it and all the water just flows down the back of your head and then it gets underneath the coat there. That's no use. And for the pockets to have any protection, then they'd have to be sealed tight. And then you get so hot running around as a cat that it overheats and your driving license gets soggy and wet and damp. That's no way to organise your things. Well, it's a way to organise it. It's just not a way to protect it. I mean, everything's organised. It's all, everything's got its own pocket and they know exactly where everything is. It's just not very, it's not very practical. And of course, the staff member there will say, I'm so sorry, sir. I wasn't paying attention or was busy looking at this. And the cat says, oh, that's no problem. What were you busy looking at? And the staff member will say, I was busy looking at this lovely plastic trousers of yours. I'm wondering why you went just now about your big long thing talking about it had suddenly turned into a coat. I'm a bit confused about that. And the cat will say, well, think about it a bit more and you'll realise a trousers or a coat for, that's made in the shape of a cat is pretty much the same thing. It's a thing that drapes over your back. Has either way, it's going to have holes for your leg or sleeves for all 4 legs to come out of. So that could be called a trousers or a coat. Although now that you mention it, maybe if it to be a trousers, it would have to have a waistline and not cover your back. The waist would come up to the, I suppose, just to go above your legs. You'd have an elastic waistband going around there. So I suppose now that you mentioned it, no, that wouldn't be very effective. Because then the whole back, your whole back is exposed and any water that drips down off your back goes straight down into your trousers. I'll go now. Oh, no. I don't know. You're right. You're right. It should be called a coat. And of course, the staff member then will say, no, I'm not saying it should be called a coat. I'm saying it should be a coat and not a trouser. Because a trouser, as you've just explained, is even less useful to a cat for the reasons you've just outlined. And the cat says, is this some sort of a trick? Is this some sort of a, here, you can't figure out wearing the rules explicitly tells you that I can't register as a car owner. So you're trying to find some way to prove that I'm psychologically incapable of safely operating a car or making choices about purchasing one by trying to make a mockery of my whole trouser thing and then trying to show that I don't understand trouser wear. Because if that's what you're doing, I can tell you, proving that a cat doesn't understand how trousers works proves nothing. And no cat, no normal operating cat would be expected to know how a trouser works. So even if I didn't know how a trouser works, which I do, it would still not be anything saying that I shouldn't be able to operate a car just because I can't figure out how a trouser would work on a cat, which it wouldn't. It's perfectly reasonable not to be able to work out. You've just said yourself that you can't figure out how a trousers would work on a cat. There would need to be a coat. And of course the staff member will say to that, they'll say, yes, sir, but I'm, for one thing, I'm not the applicant here. As it happens, I don't even drive. I come here by bus. I'm vision impaired. I don't drive at all. I'm very glad to have got this job, incidentally. I can do, finally, I have something I can do where I don't have to look at anything. You've made it very easy there because you've... Actually, you know what? You could make it easier for me. It's very helpful that you have your documents there on display in a see-through pocket of a see-through plastic trousers. If you made the plastic of the trousers, the plastic material, if that was made out of some sort of magnifying plastic as opposed to ordinary plastic, I think they could do that quite cheaply because the discount stores, they do have sheets of magnetic plastic, of magnifying plastic. And the cat says, well, that's an interesting thought. That's an interesting thought. And the staff member says, indeed, it is.